So the not self and the dance of selves. And I have to say, oh yeah, yeah, I have to say like this, the whole area of teachings around self, not self, I personally found the most liberating in my personal life. To really have this permission to question very held ideas and to really allow myself to open up to a whole range of different ways of perceiving of self, of other, and so forth. And one could say, unquestioned, we experience ourselves as the most obvious and immediate thing. I am. I am. Not so sure about you, but I am. Yeah. Are you also?
Yeah.
So here I sit. I was born. You know, then I was a little baby. I grew up. No, and then I became an adult, and now I'm aging, getting older. I have my particular personal story, which is somewhere like stored in my body, is stored in my memory, is reflected back. You know, I can look at photos now. We couldn't fix this, and this history, this experience, as I said earlier today, shaped me, made me this being that I am today, you know, shaped me in certain ways. And this history is also really influencing and shaping how I perceive this moment and how I look into the future and how I look into the past. And again, I just see that I can now open the door and say more, but I won't. So a lot, I say, we will pick up again, and there is a lot of subtext we might not mention right now. So I hold certain narratives, and very often not even that consciously, that tell me, that confirm and verify how I perceive myself of who and what I am. And also who and what I'm not. Yeah. What is possible for me and what isn't possible for me. No, I have hold certain narratives that will tell me what most likely my responses will be, my reactions will be, and so forth. Would you agree that you all have stories like this about yourself? Who hasn't? Just checking. Yeah. So these stories have been informed by my life story. The things, all the experience that happened to me. And then also they get confirmed, you know, what others reflect back, what they tell me, and so forth. And again, it's, I can say much more about it. And most likely, I will have a tendency to look at the unfolding of my life through the particular filters of my narratives so that I can actually confirm the story I'm running. So there's some knots. And this, of course, implies, and we probably will pick up again, that I'm also blind to certain experience responses that don't confirm who and what I think I am. So there is a certain bias. Most likely, I will filter my experience in a way so that I somehow, and very often unconsciously, confirm and thus more firmly establish the way I know myself already. Oh, I knew I am like this. Oh God, if I only, or whatever, you know, can be positive or negative, actually. You know, our self-use can have like a more, you know, again, I say more about it. So here we are, we carry ourselves with our patterns, with our traumas, our choice, our stories through time. And all this happened to a self. a self that is, so to say, experiencing all this ever-changing phenomena, a self that is affected by these, by experiences, by things happening. So one could say we very often have the perception that life, again, is a little bit extreme, but I say it a little bit more extreme, life out there is happening to me. And there is something unchanging here. Do you recognize this?
Yeah.
And then also things are done to me. And yes, I have a variety of roles. I'm a teacher right now. I'm sitting in front of you. I'm not sitting there. Sari has different roles. Now she's sitting here. Then she goes over and puts her little one to bed. Different role.
hopefully putting it.
So there might be very different roles we're inhabiting, but somehow there is an unchanging, a sense of an unchanging I-ness, me-ness, my-ness that is not impacted and that we don't normally question and challenge. And again, this is also very much confirmed by what we get reflected back. You know, from our social circles, our families, our friendship groups, wider society. And of course, it's more complex, but I just want to line, make some broad strokes. And also with it, you know, in our stories we are holding very often unconsciously, and this can be also, again, can be really quite tricky. We have a tendency to hang out with other selves, yeah, that confirm and mirror back our stories, even if they are painful. Yeah. So there is this self and that self and this self and that self and this self, and we somehow bump into each other. You know, we bump into each other, and sometimes we bump, and there is an attraction or liking or a dislike, or neither nor. You know, but it's like these entities bumping into each other. And this is a perception which is very much cultivated or has been cultivated in the last several hundred years in the Western culture, you know. And I speak about, I'm not saying that it's not in other cultures, but from my own cultural background, which is Western culture, where there has been, especially in the last couple of hundred of years probably, this elevation of a self that is often equated with an autonomous and self-sufficient individual. Yeah. The independent self, the separate self, the individual self. And again, it's a narrative, if you say it's a narrative rather than the truth. It's a narrative that can really have its beauty and strength and possibility. I'm not saying don't go, but it is highly problematic if we believe this to be how things really are. With it comes, you know, it has its beauty and its strength, yeah. And again, I cover some, but not everything, of course, not. But what is implied in this, for example, which is a more painful aspect, is here I am, separate individual, autonomous. I have to do it on my own. It's a view of the self that does not easily support other forms of being in this world. You know, especially those who are more based on relating on dependency, on interdependency, and so forth. Views that are based on an interdependent. I cannot exist without all this. Yeah. It's an ideal that has to deny, that has to minimize in its most extreme form any sense of dependence. It has a negative quotation, depending, as if we are independent, you know, but it has a very negative quotation. It has to deny dependence and it has to deny interdependence. Are you still? This makes sense, yeah? So one could say, like in the extreme form, I love this term, we can call it like this ideal of radical heroic autonomy, yeah? And in some cultures, it's really, really celebrated, or parts of some cultures, yeah. It's very, very, and I don't even want to go there, it's very alive in some parts of some cultures. When we really believe this ideal, if we really strive for this ideal, any facts, any recognition, any recognizing or let's leave it like this, of interdependence, of dependence, can be seen as actually a failure. It's not being good enough. You are so dependent. You should be independent. Yeah. Can be seen as a failure. Something which is humiliating. Rather than actually an absolute, inevitable, beautiful and meaningful aspect of our aliveness, our deep interdependence. You know, because interdependence is then seen as a real threat to autonomy, to this misunderstood autonomy. Yeah. Weakening the self, you know, like the interdependencies, the relational qualities, disempowering the self. You need to get rid of it. So again, this can be the extreme, and we'll see actually how, when this extreme is really operating unquestioned, how utterly destructive this can be. You know, it can imply, you know, this constant striving of having to optimize the self so that it's better than other selves. You know, the tyranny of improving the self so that we can survive, that we can be on top in our competition with other selves. And it can come into a meditation hall, you know? Because we are, to some extent, if we want it or not, we have been shaped by this to some degree or the other. So there is one aspect of our culture, I think, is this idealization of the heroic self. Independent self. And as I said, it has its shadows. It has its really, really, really problematic shadows. And it is also a myth, a narrative that has beauty, that has strength, that has validity at times. I'm not saying never, ever. You know, there is a beauty to it. Again, this is my refrain. It has beauty, it has shortcoming, and it's always problematic if it's seen as the truth how things are. So we are coming from a culture, main culture, and of course we might have our very, very particular subcultures where this isn't actually not operating that much. So I really want to name, you know, that there are many, many different ways of being, even in this main culture of maybe the worshipping of the self, where there are different really people looking for ways of living differently together, to know our interdependence. You know, even coming together here in community and acknowledging, you know, how supportive and how helpful and beautiful it is to practice with others. We're already questioning something here. Yeah. Otherwise, we would sit alone in a cave because all these other people are just disturbing you and your journey. So we are in a culture where there is this worshipping, this particular particular perception of self, autonomous and separate individual, you know, finding my true self. And again, can have a beauty, but it's much more than meets the eye. And then we come to Buddhist teachings. And if we stick around, we start to hear again and again about the importance and radically liberating deep understanding of the concept of not self. Really undermining, questioning these perceptions I just named. You know, which can be on the one extreme, you know, this belief in heroic interdependence, deep independence, heroic autonomy, heroic on one's ownness, yeah, to the very innocent problem and not so seemingly problematic perception of things are happening to a self and anything in between, yeah. So what the Buddhist teachings say is like if you really perceive self in this way, independent, happening to, there is an unquestioning I-ness, me-ness, I-ness that is unchanging, then you are actually viewing with ignorance. It's a deluded view. It's a wrong view. It's a view that will lead to suffering and pain. You know, and we know that it can lead to suffering and pain when we have very negative self-views. You know, it's obvious, yeah. When we have narratives which are really tell us how unworthy we are, how insufficient we are, how not good enough we are. But equally, it is painful to adhere to a self-narrative to say I'm the best, you know, because life will not concur. Yeah. So here we are suddenly faced with this question, oh, actually this is a wrong view. And it's somehow very, very counterintuitive. Yeah. And this is really to say the least. And this understanding, one could say, this discovery, this liberating perception of not self is a unique discovery of the Buddha. He was like the first, you know, because there was still this sense there is actually an unchanging soul, the Atman, isn't it? Atman, you know, the separate soul. And then the goal of spiritual practice was that the separate existing particular soul will join with a cosmic soul. Which I forgot the name now. At Brahman, thank you. God, I should know this, but it was gone. So and then we know what then can happening. So we come and then we hear this view and then we take on the view of not self. Yeah. And again, this can go in different ways. You know, what I find sometimes interesting is, again, also to see this in myself, you know, okay, now it's about looking everything at not self. And no, actually, I have to phrase it differently. You know, as a good Buddhist, I'm understanding not self. And then I try to entertain this view. But if I actually don't continue to really investigate, probe, unpick, find out, most likely I will still continue a lot of time to act from the conviction that there isn't actually, that there is a self. Because it's so counterintuitive. And then the Buddhist teachings offer all kinds of ingenious ways of look for it and see if you can find it. They don't say there isn't a self, they say look and see if you can find it. Up to now, no one has. And really, really more and more probe into it, you know, inner perception, or there is a sense now of, and again, not making it wrong. You know, because it's also not about then hanging out in a view of only not self. It's a tricky, I should say this differently. Okay, what the not self then becomes, because this is a character, so I really have to, can I go back, delete, and retake? So I have to do it differently. Very often, the teachings of not self become then equated with there isn't a self, and therefore whatever is arising, you know, I'm actually devaluing, you know, I'm only having this unpicking of self, rather than actually develop a capacity, an intelligence, a skillfulness of being able to travel along the spectrums of perceptions of self. From the very, very subtle to the more coarse. It's not for something I wanted to say tonight, but I did it just now, and we will pick it up. And there is a tendency in us, again, something you might recognize or something you might be not so familiar with you. One hears the teaching on not self, and then there is this yearning. So how is then the self defined? What is the self? What is the self? If there's a self, isn't there a self? Or there isn't a self? You know, then we go into this all kinds of ideas. When you look into the Buddhist teachings, you will actually not find a definition of self. You will not find a definition of self. The Buddha apparently was not interested in defining what we are and what our self is. Ajahn Chef, one of Buddhist teachers, Ajahn Chef, also called known as Tanisara Bhikkhu, he phrased this very beautifully. He said, the Buddha wasn't interested in defining the self. His approach was much more compassionate. He was interested to teach, to point to how we actually create self, how we can do this skillfully, and how to create not self and how to do this skillfully. And he actually said that he actually taught and said again and again, Buddha, that clinging to any theory to self will be limiting, will be the wrong direction to go, and will give rise to some degree of suffering. Any definition, any theory of self. He wanted us to see how we define our own sense of self and to recognize how we can define it in ways, how we can limit it, that we can suffer and also often cause suffering around of us, to those around of us. So it's a skillful, appropriate, respectful holding of this arising of life, being able to respond in all kinds of frequencies, densities, spaciousnesses, and so forth. That, does it make sense what I'm saying? Does it make sense? So what is really hard for us, you know, for many of us, again, something which I hear again and again, and I definitely came to practice, maybe unconsciously, but it became more conscious over time, was this wish of creating a better self. You know, a newly improved version of Kirsten. And it's so painful, God. Yeah. Course, you know, then we have these openings, you know, and there is this capacity maybe of deep care showing itself, this heart ability to for compassion and joy. I got it. No, that's me now. That's how I am. Yeah. I just have to spend like a day with my family. Oh, I lost it. I'm still as bad as I always was. Yeah. And this swinging back and forth, yeah. So, so painful. And now I'm laughing about it, but it was really painful. And I spent a lot of times in retreat, you know, and generally openings happening, but having no concept actually to wisely root these places, map it. So it was either I am like this, or I am not like that. And if I'm not like this, I failed. Rather than seeing, oh, the conditions have changed, now it's more difficult for the self to arise in certain ways. So again, Buddhist teachings then point out, okay, now look how we create self. Look for it. All these different ways, the narratives, the stories, our ways of relating, as I said earlier, to any aspect of our experience and to create a self out of it. Now, the self-definition, the self-use, the thoughts, the statements we make about ourselves. And we can also discover then with this, in this exploration, probably something which you have discovered already today, you know, that whatever is present or absent in myself, every state of my heart, of my mind, every state of citta, you know, every arising in the heart mind will be a way the self, along with the body, is sensed and felt. So every sense, self-sense, one could say it's mirrored in the body. And this is why it's so important to actually be alive, to be attuned, to be present to this field of awareness we call our body. So Sari today mentioned to tune into the delight, if there is some. To tune into the ease, if there is none. How do we know delight and ease in the body? How do you know delight and ease in the body? Any responses? It's not a test. Anyone has a with like the, how do you know there is some sense of delight, ease, calm in the body?
Spacious.
Spacious, yes. Sense of spaciousness. Does it feel dense or less dense?
Yes.
Less dense. So this is a sign, less density. Yeah, absolutely. Anything else, any other aspect? Less dense, spacious. How do you know? There's some ease, there's some well-being in the body, some delight.
Softness.
Softness, yeah. This is, yeah. That's what you said, isn't it? Softness, yeah. Yeah, the calming, the pacifying, absolutely, yeah. So we know this in our body, isn't it? The body, the heart, mind feels differently. Some of you might have had moments of delight and ease, of softness, of less denseness, of spaciousness, and others not. Again, it's not doing anything wrong, you know. You know, very often it's the first evening or the beginning of the retreat, you get like this five dynamics mentioned, these five friends, you know, the five so-called hindrances, which I actually don't like so much, this word, the five hindrances. I like more to call them like the five difficult dynamics, as they are, don't like, aversion to what is arising. Who had this today? The wish of something to be different, clinging for something that is not here. Who had this today? Good. Yeah. And I'm just like, not to put you now on the spot, you know, to just really depersonalize it. These are common patterns which will arise. Who had moments of tiredness, of sluggishness, of denseness, of restlessness, agitation, itchiness, yeah. Confusion, you know, why I'm here, do I'm doing what, and so forth. Again, I don't want to now go in all the different things, but to just see, yes, they arise. It's not that you're doing something wrong. Sari had it, I had it, you had it, we will have it. You know, it's part of the territory we are actually exploring. And our invitation, our task is here, is to know when they have arisen. And we know that they have arisen. Most of them will have a very particular, unique taste and coloring, a texture. You know, confusion is different from tiredness. And they can all come together, so they can come in packs of three and four and five. But they all have a particular coloring. What they all have, I would say, is have in common, especially when met with aversion or clinging, is denseness, contraction, tenseness, tension. And also, if we are not aware, they will thus shape our body, mind, and heart, and the narratives we are telling about ourselves and our practice. Has this happened today? God, I'm so tired. I shouldn't be here. Whatever, you know. So something is arising that is arising because, for whatever reasons, for whatever conditions, it's shaping this heart mind, is shaping in this moment the perception of body, mind, and heart, shaping the self in this moment, and then it will shape whatever we hold in our, in this case, in a particular way. It's like a lovely, lovely little ball of kohlrabi. Yeah. Then we will look at our life, at our practice, at our future, at our past through the eye of this hindrance. And we believe it if we are not aware of it. Yeah. You know, and there might be this moment where a hindrance is operating. I shouldn't be here. God, I hate these people. She says another word, I strangle her. Blah, blah, blah. Oh, God, I'm so bad. I'm so bad. Whatever, you know. Oh, God, I'm so fantastic. This is the other thing, yeah. You know, openness, softness, spaciousness, compassion. You hate, you know. And then again, of course, conditions change, arise, and the self is arising differently. So again, now I've changed already slightly the language. Before I said it's happening to the self, now I'm saying the self is arising differently. Yeah? It's actually quite a big shift here. Not that it's happening to me, but according to this or this arising, the self is arising. My view of self, other world is arising with it. Just see if where I want to go now with this, if I want to put in a lot more. So in the instructions today, one could say like Sari emphasized this tuning in into that what is delightful, that is some sense of ease. Very important, I say it again, this doesn't mean if you didn't experience ease and delight, but sluggishness and so forth, that you did something wrong. No, it's just this was not so accessible right now. And I think sometimes in our culture, and luckily it's happening more and more, this pointing to delight in what feels good is actually a little bit countercultural. You know? And yeah, I actually have to focus on the problems. Yeah? You know, I have to focus. Yeah, it's nice, but actually here it's not nice. You know, I go in there. Yeah. So it's actually really skillful. Say, okay, when there is something that feels more spacious, dense, have it, know your this self arising in this way. Know the self arising in this way, less dense, more spacious, more malleable, more flexible. Know that this is possible. It is possible for the self to arise in this way. And sometimes it's not. Then it's dense, then it's tense, then it's contracted. What's the problem? Then sometimes dense, sometimes not. Yeah. So again, I'm just making it a little bit flippant, but to see the freedom of it. And sometimes there's tiredness, there's restlessness, there's confusion. Sometimes I love to sit here with you in silence and meditate, and sometimes I rather wouldn't. Yeah, and again, it will shape and influence how I perceive myself, you, my time on retreat, and so forth. So when we becoming sensitive to this field of awareness, sensitive to the body, sensitive to what is actually happening, openness, spaciousness, softness, denseness, what we will discover is that this sense of I, of me and my is actually not static. On a very mundane day-to-day unfolding, it's not even, it's very obvious, it's very tangible. It roams and shifts, it changes, it transforms. Sometimes expansive, sometimes contracted. Sometimes small self, dense, hardened self. Sometimes wider, more inclusive, soft. And it's so obvious. And we can say, yeah, but that's obvious, so what? But I think the what I really missed was in my early years of practice was a very clear support in actually to what this points to. It became all about the experience rather than the changing of the experience and why it changed. Does it make sense? Mm-hmm. Okay, now I'm good, now I'm bad. You know, oh God, it's shifting and changing, and I actually have some agency here. I can develop a skill to facilitate this arising of self into a much, 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 much more subtle ways. And also, I have a flexibility in how I can allow myself to arise and then to respond. So even after years of practice, I couldn't make this connection somehow. I was too fixed into what I'm experiencing. Good, bad. I've done it, I lost it. Yeah. So, some years ago, someone, and again, something I hear again and again, when someone comes and they say, oh, in the beginning of a personal retreat, I will have this conversation, you know, welcoming someone, and then anything particular you wanna explore during your retreat in Gaia House. And less so, but still, I want to find my true self. And I would never say there isn't a true self. Never. It would be very unkind. Yeah. Because also even in this inquiry, I want to find my true self. There can be something really beautiful as long as we don't expect to find it as a particular circumscribed, this is my true self. Yeah, it's actually something beautiful, you know, one could rephrase it. What is possible? In what ways can this self arise? In what way can this heart, mind open up, have capacity and so forth? One could say this is our truer nature. Yeah. But it's not, oh, this is my true self. Or look at your true self, that's mine. And again, Ajahn Chefi has this really really beautiful simile, or I don't know if actually simile is not the right word, but he said, you know, can we look, something we might pick up again, as self, not as an entity. Again, in our culture, we look at the self as an entity, which is either good, bad, or whatever, you know, true self, not true self, this, that. It's very nouny, you know, it's a noun. Can we see it as an activity? An activity that is can be done more and more skillfully. We can engage more and more skillfully. And I think this is what we want to maybe unpick a little bit in the coming days. And very, very important in this, still this emphasis on calming, of disentangling, of simplification. It's like we want, one could say, like that this instrument can more easily play in different ways. That we have the capacity, or that we even can open up to the possibility to not having to give the narratives that might be operating in ourselves, as long as we can go think back, you know, about who I am, what I am, what I'm not, you know, that we can actually really dive a little bit underneath and see what is possible here. Yes, they might still be operating, yeah, but that we can start to question them. You know, sometimes all we need to do, there is already a real sense of freedom. If we even have the capacity, you know, what I often say is like to put a question mark with a pencil. There's already some freedom around it. Just have a moment of silence with each other, letting go of the words. I've said you don't have to go into a formal posture, but just having this moment of in-breath, out-breath, relaxing, releasing. Don't have to figure out right now anything, but just letting it sink, letting it land. Leave behind. It doesn't seem helpful and supportive. And take with you that it maybe gave you like a hunch, a sniff, an idea. Take with you that what is actually awakening your curiosity or even your confident, I'm not sure about this. I want to find out if she is really right or not. She said. Thank you again for your attention, for your listening. Some time for walking, standing, enjoying the evening, the air of this cool autumnly evening. And then we meet back here in, let's say, in 25 minutes, and we have a shorter sit together to end the day. So I will ring the bell.